Good evening. Trump doubles down and asks for China's help to get Biden, who is in on the call, and the deadline for sexual harassment training nears in New York. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, October 3rd, 2019. President Donald Trump again invited foreign interference in a U.S. presidential election by publicly calling on China to investigate Democratic political rival Joe Biden, the kind of request that has already triggered an impeachment inquiry in Congress. His comments began with a response to a question about the House impeachment inquiry over his call to the president of Ukraine.
Well, I would think that if they were honest about it, they'd start a major investigation into the Biden. It's a very simple answer. They should investigate the Bidens, because how does a company that's newly formed and all these companies, if you look at, and by the way, likewise, China should start an investigation into the Bidens, because what happened in China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine. So I would say that President Zelensky, if it were me, I would recommend that they start an investigation into the Bidens, because nobody has any doubt that they weren't crooked. That was a crooked deal, 100%. He had no knowledge of energy, didn't know the first thing about it. All of a sudden, he's getting $50,000 a month, plus a lot of other things. Nobody has any doubt. And they got rid of a prosecutor who was a very tough prosecutor. They got rid of him. Now they're trying to make it the opposite way, but they got rid. So if I were the president, I would certainly recommend that of Ukraine.
Trump and his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, have offered no evidence for their assertions of corruption against former Vice President Biden. Trump spoke again as he left the the White House on his way to a campaign event at the Villages in Florida. There he described the impeachment probe as crap.
And that's why they do the impeachment crap, because they know they can't beat us fairly. That's the only reason they're doing it. They can't win. They can't win.
Hunter Biden was on the board of a Ukrainian gas company at the time when the United States and Europe were trying to woo Ukraine away from next-door neighbor Russia. Meanwhile, in another related story, Department of Defense spokesperson Jonathan Hoffman told reporters that there were no military officials in on the call between Trump and Ukraine's president.
Were any DOD officials, either Secretary Esper or any policy people, listening in on the president's perfect July 25th phone call?
No, they were not.
Nobody was sitting in?
No. To my knowledge, no one from the Department of Defense was on that call. I've specifically asked the Secretary of Defense that question, and he was not on that call.
Can I ask you to react to one thing? Lindsey Graham, the senator, last week told reporters the actual delay in aid was coming from the Pentagon as much as anybody else, because they don't know much about the new president and whether he could be trusted. What do you think about that? Was that accurate?
In keeping with my longstanding practice of the last press briefing, as I'm not going to comment on what other people were thinking in their comments. So I haven't spoken to Senator Graham on that. I can't explain his comments on that.
I mean, you've delved into this pretty deeply, it sounds like. I mean, does that accurately reflect what you were hearing within the building here?
And what was the part?
The actual delay in aid was coming from the Pentagon as much as anybody else, because they didn't know about the new president, whether the new president could be trusted.
Our goal throughout the process was to have the aid out the door by the end of the fiscal year. And so we'd been taking steps throughout the process and did so that we reviewed, made a determination on the aid, and worked with the interagency to get that aid out the door. And as I mentioned, the bulk of that aid went out the door prior to the end of the fiscal year. The rest of it will be going out in the next few days to a week. And so we believe we accomplished that. So go back over here.
And investigators will be looking into exactly why aid was cut off and then reinstated, and if that had anything to do with Trump's phone call and his desire to have the Ukraine government look into his opponent in the election. Vice President Mike Pence's team, meanwhile, continues to distance their boss from the unfolding scandal surrounding President Trump's July 25th call with Ukraine's president, this time in a story published by the Washington Post about what the vice president knew about the call. In the Post story published Wednesday, Pence team members said a senior aide to the vice president was on the phone call in which Trump pressured Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to investigate his potential 2020 opponent, Joe Biden. During their September meeting, Pence told Zelensky that the U.S. was not going to release millions of dollars in aid to Ukraine due to concerns that the country was not doing enough to combat corruption. Pence's team denied that the vice president was trying to deliver a veiled message in support of Trump's pressure on Ukraine to dig up dirt on Biden. And a former judge and columnist for TruthDig.com is Bill Blum. He's written a piece for the website called Donald Trump is Finished. He says impeachment is inevitable and necessary.
Trump is trampling all democratic norms. Mm-hmm. He's going all out with this assault on the Constitution, with attempting to solicit the aid of foreign governments to investigate a political rival, etc. and so forth, the emoluments and the obstruction of justice, the wholesale defiance of congressional subpoenas. I can go on and on. I think we're reaching a tipping point.
How do we get here? How do we get to this point?
Well, we got here in a very complicated way, including the economic crisis of 2007, 2008, which lingered into 2016. We also have witnessed the slow erosion of working class political power because the Democratic Party has betrayed the working class and the middle class. So there are lots of reasons why we got here, but I am not among those who say Trump is simply a symptom. Something else is the disease. While I do think the disease is much larger than Trump, you can't cure the disease without getting rid of him. And if you look at the latest polling, I think public opinion is starting to shift in the way that it did in 1974 against Nixon. Nixon was elected, reelected in 72 by an overwhelming landslide margin. And now Trump is a minority candidate in terms of electoral support, and his support seems now to be lagging again, but support for impeachment, the impeachment inquiry, and the actual remedy of impeachment are all up. So I think we're reaching a tipping point. I think he will be impeached, as that term is used legally, meaning that the House will vote to pass at least one article of impeachment. And I think the major debate as we go forward in the coming weeks is going to be over the scope of the articles, not whether he has committed impeachable offenses. Once the House passes articles, the Senate will have to conduct some kind of trial. I don't believe the Senate will remove him, but I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing for Democrats, provided that they properly run in the 2020 elections, characterizing the GOP as betraying the Constitution. So I think they can turn that defeat in the Senate into a victory at the polls.
Is Trump, in your opinion, a very unintelligent man who is just operating insanely from his own emotions, or is he a tool of the evangelical right, or is he a fascist, or all of the above?
I've conferred with mental health experts about him. I don't think he's an unintelligent person. He's not legally insane in any way, although you might want to question that from time to time. But I think he does suffer from some emotional disorders, namely antipersonality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder. You put them together and you've got a malignant narcissist. So that's one of the drivers. I don't think he has any kinship with the evangelicals. His whole life is a repudiation of religious principles. As far as him being the tool of other forces, well, he needs other forces to retain power. So that's how he operates. It's basically on a transactional basis. He's also, and this is something else I would emphasize, and I've written about before, he is very, very afraid of what will happen to him if he isn't reelected and doesn't have the immunity from prosecution that because of DOJ policy he now enjoys. I think he's very, very afraid of that. And I think that's a key driver of his behavior. And he's going to try anything in the coming weeks to distract, to accuse others of wrongdoing. And this is in no way a defense of Joe Biden. I think that the focus has to be on Trump's high crimes and misdemeanors. And if that focus is maintained, I predict he will be impeached. He will not be removed by the Senate. And unless the Democrats blow it, he won't be reelected.
Bill Blum is a former judge and columnist for TruthDig.com. He's written a piece for the website called Donald Trump is Finished. And the former special U.S. envoy to Ukraine told lawmakers Thursday that he wasn't personally involved in President Donald Trump's effort to have that country's leader investigate Joe Biden's family, and he warned Ukrainians to steer clear of American politics. Kurt Volker, who has become a central figure in the House's impeachment inquiry, spent hours behind closed doors as lawmakers and staff pored through dozens of pages of text messages, photos, and other correspondence during the interview. Volker appeared straightforward and forthcoming, according to participants, and there was no question he did not answer. The day long, that was according to somebody who was there who spoke on conditions of anonymity to discuss the private session. The day long appearance is the first in what is expected to be a series of interviews with officials inside and outside of the State Department. House investigators want to understand if they played any role or have more information about Trump's efforts to press Ukrainian President Zelensky for damaging information about the former vice president. Volker resigned on Friday after being asked to testify to Congress about the whistleblower complaint that describes how Trump, in a July 25th phone call, repeatedly prodded Zelensky for an investigation of Biden and his son Hunter. Volker agreed to a voluntary interview with lawmakers and congressional staff led by House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff of California as Democrats dig deeper into the administration's handling of Ukraine. And Devin Nunes, the top Republican and Trump's staunchest defender on the House Intelligence Committee, filed a $77.5 million lawsuit Monday in federal court in Iowa against Esquire publisher Hearst Magazines and former reporter Ryan Lizza. It alleges a September 30, 2018 story about the farm that he had bought with his family in Iowa has caused injury to his good name and professional reputation. Nunes has gone after other media outlets and court filings, similar lawsuits earlier this year against Twitter and newspaper publisher The McClatchy Company. Nunes is the latest lawsuit. In the latest lawsuit, repeatedly refers to the Esquire story by Lizza entitled "Devin Nunes' Family Farm is Hiding a Politically Explosive Secret" as a hit piece. The article is about how Nunes' family secretly moved to Iowa where they run a dairy farm. The article also discusses the use of undocumented immigrant labor on dairy farms in Iowa. Nunes sued the McClatchy Company and others in Virginia in April for $150 million, claiming a 2018 story in the Fresno Bee was character assassination. In March, he sued Twitter and several users for more than $250 million, accusing them of defamation and negligence. The defendants in that lawsuit include two anonymous parody accounts, Devin Nunes Mom and Devin Nunes Cow. The suit filed in Virginia accuses Twitter of knowingly hosting and monetizing content that is clearly abusive, hateful, and defamatory. Nunes's suit also accuses Twitter of censoring viewpoints with which it disagrees and shadow banning conservatives. And after two consecutive days of global stock sell-offs fueled by fears of recession, investors were hoping Thursday would deliver some good news on the United States economy, but they didn't get it. A weaker than expected services sector compounded fears that the U.S. economy is showing signs of stress from business uncertainty fed by the trade wars waged by the Trump administration. All eyes will now be on the pivotal U.S. monthly jobs report released on Friday. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In international news, Iraq's Prime Minister Abdel Abdulmahdi has called for dialogue after a third consecutive day of deadly anti-government protests in the capital, Baghdad, and several southern cities. Abdulmahdi's office said the prime minister was continuing contacts with protesters in a bid to end the political crisis and return to normal life. The announcement came as 4,000 protesters rallied in Baghdad, defying a government-enforced curfew to call again for improved services, more jobs, and an end to widespread corruption. The crowds gathered in Baghdad's Tehran Square and attempted to march onto the central Tahrir Square, only to be met with open fire and heavy tear gas. Police also used live ammunition in the Safaraniya district of Baghdad, and there were protests in the southwestern Shula district. At least 19 people have been killed in 3 days of clashes, according to the Iraqi High Commission for Human Rights. Iraq has the world's fourth largest reserves of oil, according to the IMF, but much of its population of 40 million lives in poverty and without decent health care, education, or power and water supply. We'll keep going until the government falls, Ali, an unemployed university graduate, told the AFP news agency on Thursday. I've got nothing but 250 lira, about 20 U.S. cents in my pocket, while government officials have millions. More than half of those killed in the last 3 days have been in the southern city of Nasiriyah. And switching to local news, the MTA is busily updating its turnstiles with new readers for its tap-to-pay fare system, slated to replace the MetroCard entirely by 2023. One Metro New York, OMNY, or Omni, has been touted as a way to make paying for transit faster and easier, but a privacy watchdog is sounding an alarm. It's a system that's rife with security vulnerabilities and ripe for exploitation. The Surveillance Technology Oversight Project, STOP, a nonprofit advocacy organization fighting to end discriminatory surveillance, says in its Omni Surveillance OMI report. Given how often government agencies, including the New York Police Department, have abused surveillance data to target ethnic and religious minorities, and how for-profit corporations face overwhelming pressure to monetize user data, Omni has the potential to expose millions of transit users to troubling repercussions, the report states. And October 9th is the deadline for all New York State employees to receive sexual harassment training. New York City employers need to comply with the city's even more stringent training requirements. Andrew Rawson is CEO of a company that makes the training videos we've all been watching as the date looms. He says the requirements came partly as a result of the revelations of abuse by Harvey Weinstein and the movement of women who've had enough.
It's the Me Too movement that generated the change in the laws. While only two states, until very recently, only two states mandated sexual harassment training. It was California and Connecticut. And both states only mandated it for managers in companies with 50 or more. Now, in the 2 years since Harvey Weinstein, California expanded their law to include not just managers, but employees and managers, and from companies with five or more. So in California, they went from having about 5 million people that had to get trained to about 15. In New York State, every employee in New York State now by law must be trained. Connecticut expanded their law from just being 50 or more and managers to everyone from, I think, three or more. Illinois just passed a law that everyone has to be trained. Rhode Island has got one on the books. Delaware passed a law, and it's and every time it passes virtually unanimously in the legislature. You know, no one's going to vote against this. So that's really what's driving the business.
I see. Great. Anything like to add?
Just that the other thing we've learned is that it's one of the things that's driven our growth is that companies have realized that there's historically been a big gap between their words and their deeds, where they would say, we will not tolerate sexual harassment or discrimination in our organization. And then they'd send out the same old boring training they've been using for years, and they'd never mention it again for a year. And there's really, I mean, how serious can you be about it if you pay lip service to it? But what we've learned is when we include an introduction from a senior executive in the company, and he or she addresses the camera and talks about how important it is and the fact that they are serious about protecting people from retaliation and about encouraging a workplace that's dignified and respectful, when that starts out with that opening video that we'll create for our clients, and then when they see something that's really engaging and interactive, and then when they have things like follow-up video on unconscious bias and implicit bias and diversity and inclusion, now all of a sudden companies are moving from this once-a-year check-the-box, okay, great, I don't have to worry about that for a year, to saying that, having their employees say, you know what, I'm kind of starting to believe you do care about this. And I do believe if I speak up that you guys will protect me. And I do believe if I see something that I should bring it forth. And now you've taught me some ways of doing it. So it's really, change is slow, but it's happening.
And Rawson says the new training is based on the idea that training videos can be fun and engaging.
New York State has a requirement that says every employee must be trained, and even more, every contractor, an intern, must be trained by October 9th, and they must cover the topics in the New York State law with regards to discrimination and harassment.
Tell us what you do. And
nobody learns from boring. So if you want to make somebody laugh, all you have to do is say, we make sexual compliance training that isn't horrible. And everybody laughs and say, oh, you'd be the first one. So we started just in 2016 with the premise that if we could bring in, be heavily video-based, if we could bring in actually screenwriters and real actors and professional video production quality, and not base our courses solely on the law, stop teaching people about the law because we know that doesn't work, but use the law as the foundation and then teach people how to behave by telling stories, because nobody remembers facts. People remember stories. So our courses are really a series of stories or vignettes. And to make them even more interesting is we don't just make them just passive, just click and watch the video, is we actually, the story unfolds, the scenario unfolds, and then at the dramatic arc of the story, it freezes, and we ask the viewer, what happens next? How do they want to see the story unfold? So we really provide alternate endings and make it much more of an immersive and much, frankly, much more of a respectful experience for the learner.
When you're approaching sexual harassment training, what are you trying to get through to people by these vignettes, this training about how they should handle their behavior in the workplace?
Things have changed in the post-Harvey Weinstein era, where people, before Harvey Weinstein, people really didn't care whether the training was effective. They cared whether the training gave them a good legal defense in the court of law, because the training was written by lawyers, and in some respects, it was written by lawyers for lawyers. But now, people really want it to be effective. And one of the things that the training, our training has evolved, and I think the industry is evolving, where instead of just kind of pedantically telling people, don't do this and don't do that, we're really trying to get people to change their behavior. And in a group sense, meaning that until the last year or so, nobody's training included training on bystander intervention, meaning what do you do if you're not the person that's the subject of the harassment? You're supposed to just look at your shoes and hope somebody else reports it? No, here are the things you should do to get involved. Well, what do you mean? If I'm in a meeting with my boss's boss and he or she says something inappropriate, am I supposed to speak up there? That's never going to happen. So there's different techniques depending on the situation that somebody in. The other thing is that one of the fundamental tenets of the Me Too movement is that people were subjected to all types of misconduct in years past and never spoke up for fear of reprisal, retaliation, or that they would somehow it would somehow hurt them in the long run. In New York City, the law requires managers to report incidents of sexual misconduct, even if the person who brought it to their attention says, I can handle it, I just want you to know, but please don't say anything. They're not allowed to keep that confidential. They must report it up the chain of command.
And that's Andrew Rawson. He's CEO of a company that says that it's about time for new training to come forward and be used to prepare people for a world of Me Too when we are all aware of our responsibilities in the workplace. And that's some of the news for Thursday, October 3rd, 2019. The news was engineered by Kathy Davis for the WBAI Evening News. I'm Paul DiRienzo.